Welcome back to the Below Average Joe's MMA Show. First and foremost, I want to apologize for no episodes this past Friday and Monday. On Thursday, when I typically record, I became a little under the weather, lost my voice a little bit throughout the weekend, had some coughs and congestion. There's still a little bit left in me as of right now on Tuesday when I'm recording this portion of the podcast, but I'm good enough to be back in the studio. And what a perfect time, because UFC 300 is here. The little delay in episodes is no more. I am back and ready to rock and roll. We did miss talking about UFC Vegas 90 and the first PFL event of the 2024 season, which featured heavyweights and women's flyweights. But I did still keep up with those on social media. If you want to get my thoughts on any of that, feel free to check that out at the BAJ MMA on all social media platforms. But for today's episode, we have UFC 300, the biggest mixed martial arts fight card of all time, is here. And we do have PFL going down on Friday, which means I will get to at least mention it a little bit in this episode. Since these come out Friday morning, the fights are going to be Friday night. Last week it was on Thursday, so it wouldn't have really mattered anyways for that Friday episode. But here we are. UFC 300 gets a lot of the show. We're going to start with the title fight discussion. We've got three of them, technically. Two if you want to talk about undisputed actual titles, and we have the BMF championship as well. Las Vegas, Nevada, UFC 300, it all starts right here, right now. The biggest fight card of all time, UFC 300, April 13th, 2024. It is finally here. It is time for this monumental, historic event for us all to bear witness to. For YouTube's sake, I'm going to do three separate videos on the channel. I'm going to do one video discussing the three championship fights. That is what you're here and seeing right now. The second video will be the latter two fights on the main card: Charles Oliveira, Armand Saryukian, Bo Nickel, Cody Brundage, and then the four regular prelim fights. And then the third video will be the early prelim four fights, which literally kicks off with two former champions, Davison Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt. So that's going to be the three video breakdown on YouTube this week. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday is what I'm anticipating the schedule to be like, and then plenty of short content as well for UFC 300 and for PFL going down Friday night. But let's get into it. Let's not wait any longer. UFC 300, Alex Pereira defends his light heavyweight championship against Jamahal Hill, coming to regain the belt that he never lost. The co-main event, Zhang Weili looks to defend her title for the second time against Yan Xiaonan, the number one ranked strawweight contender. In the third title fight, Justin Gaethje will actually defend, technically, the BMF title against Max Holloway at 155 pounds. We'll start at 205 pounds, Pereira versus Hill, the headlining spot of UFC 300. The light heavyweight champion of the world, Alex Pereira, was granted a middleweight title shot in the UFC after just three victories and seven total fights in his entire professional mixed martial arts career. Not only did he knock out and shock the world by beating Israel Adesanya that night in November of 2022 in Madison Square Garden, but he would then go on to, yes, lose that middleweight title, but jump up to 205 pounds, beat Jan Blachowicz, earn a shot at the light heavyweight title, and then defeat Jiří Prochazka in November of last year in that very same arena, Madison Square Garden. So with 11 total professional mixed martial arts fights, Alex Pereira has beaten four former champions and become a two-weight UFC world champion. And Saturday night, he will headline the biggest fight card in UFC history by welcoming back the former light heavyweight champion, Jamahal Hill, the first ever Dana White Contender Series alum to win a UFC championship. Coming back after more than a year off from a torn Achilles, he looks to get his title back around his waist. It's no secret that what Alex Pereira has done has been nothing short of incredible, unbelievable, unprecedented, never done before. The list goes on in terms of words that you would want to describe Poatan's career with. Wins over Sean Strickland, Israel Adesanya, Jan Blachowicz, Jiří Prochazka at 36 years old after years and years and years on the kickboxing side of mixed martial arts, becoming a two-weight world champion in his own right in that regard, in that sport, by knocking out Israel Adesanya and beating Israel Adesanya in that sport. It is one of the most incredible, rare careers I feel like we have ever seen in the sport of mixed martial arts, and especially in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Now, after his five-fight UFC middleweight career and moving up to 205 pounds, it didn't start out with just some star-making performance or crazy knockout like he had done in his UFC debut with a flying knee. He instead, Alex Pereira, squeaked by in a split decision against former champion Jan Blachowicz in a very close fight, very closely contested fight, where Pereira had to show that he can go the full 15 minutes in order to pull out a victory, in which he had only had to do one prior time when he beat Bruno Silva back in 2022. But regardless of it being a close fight, he got the victory and proceeded into a title opportunity. With Jamahal Hill on the sidelines recovering from his injury, it was Alex Pereira moving up to win a second world title against Jiří Prochazka, who had just returned as well from an injury similar to what Jamahal Hill will be doing this coming weekend. Similar to Alex Pereira, but in even quicker fashion, Jiří Prochazka in his own right earned a title shot in the UFC after just two victories. He debuted in 2020 by knocking out Volkan Oezdemir, a former title challenger. He then would go on to knock out Dominic Reyes in 2021, and in 2022, he would fight Glover Teixeira in one of the craziest fights of all time, the fight of the year for the UFC in 2022. And he submitted Glover Teixeira with 28 seconds left in the fight to become the light heavyweight champion of the world. That reign was short-lived, as Jiří would go on to injure his shoulder very badly. He would be sidelined from June 12, 2022 up until November of 2023. And that night, Alex Pereira made history by becoming a two-weight world champion, middleweight, light heavyweight, the first ever of double champion in those two weight classes, and he did it by knocking out Jiří Prochazka 4 minutes and 8 seconds into the second round. And now Jamahal Hill will look to do what Jiří Prochazka could not do, to return from a devastating injury, beat Alex Pereira, and be the light heavyweight champion of the world. Again, it was a belt that Jiří never lost. It was a belt that he vacated upon injury, and Jamahal Hill never lost his light heavyweight title after he beat Glover Teixeira in January of 2023. Jamahal would actually tear his Achilles in a basketball game, a pickup game against other UFC fighters in July of last year. I think it was International Fight Week of 2023. Now he is back in April of 2024. So it has been 14 months out of action for Jamahal Hill, just shy of 15 months, as a matter of fact. And what Alex Pereira has done with his career is incredible, but Jamahal Hill is just as good. He's amassed a win of 6 wins and 1 loss in the UFC. The only loss to Paul Craig in a fight where Jamahal Hill's arm was playing spaghetti noodle. It was flapping all over the place. Looks like he dislocated his elbow. Wild fight. That entire card, UFC 263, was just wild in its own right. But ever since that loss in the summer of 2021, Jamahal Hill has tallied off 4 straight victories, 3 of them by devastating knockout, and the 4th and final to become the champion was in a masterclass performance over Glover Teixeira. And as I had said in the intro, he was the first Dana White Contender Series alum to become a UFC world champion. The promotion is behind him for that very reason. They want as many people as possible from that show to be highly regarded in the sport, to be champions. Jamahal Hill led the charge, followed by Sugar Sean O'Malley, and he is still the current bantamweight champion of the world. I love everything about the X's and O's of this fight as well. The storylines are incredible. Jamal looking to come back from an injury that we don't see very often in this sport of mixed martial arts. A ruptured Achilles is something that is very rare in this fight game. So he's looking to come back from an injury, regain the title that he never lost, and continue on in his prime years at the ripe age of just 32 years old. Alex Pereira looks to continue building and cementing a legacy in such little time that is truthfully going to become unmatched if he continues to win. He's 36 years old and doing remarkable things, and if he can continue to get victories, his resume will be etched in stone. But as I said, the X's and O's are interesting. You look at this, the metrics are identical. Both guys 6'4", both guys with 79-inch reach. Both guys love to stand and strike and bang on the feet. Both are known for devastating knockouts, and they both have done it against high-level competition. Pereira has knocked out the likes of Sean Strickland, Israel Adesanya, Jiří Procházka. Jamal Hill has knocked out Jimmy Crute, Thiago Santos, which at the time was the first guy to do that in nearly 4 years to Santos. He's knocked out Johnny Walker in one of the most insane looking knockouts that you'll ever see in this fight game. These guys have fight ending power at any moment in a fight. And the community seems to be split on this. Pereira, as of right now, I'm recording this on Tuesday, so it's a little bit earlier in the week than normal. He's a minus 130 favorite to retain his championship. Jamal Hill on the comeback as the slight underdog, plus 110. I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know if I'll be touching this fight on the side of picking a winner. Now, will this fight go 25 minutes? I would be astonished if it did. Jamal Hill, for what it's worth, when going the distance is 5-0, but Alex Pereira is 2-0. So while it is possible, I see both guys looking to come out here and make a statement. And it may not happen in the first round. It may not happen in the second round. But as this fight goes on, two high-level strikers like this will be able to pinpoint the weaknesses and the holes in each other's games. Someone will capitalize, and someone will leave the light heavyweight champion of the world with a knockout victory. So give me your predictions for the UFC 300 main event in the comments below. I love this fight. I'm glad that they got this spot. People that are complaining about UFC 300 are just, it's insane. It's petty. I know that Dana hyped it up that we were going to get, you know, GSP, Habib, Conor McGregor. That's what it felt like in terms of the hype. But let's be realistic here, guys. We know that that wasn't going to happen. And so if you just take those expectations away and just be a fan of the sport, this card is unbelievable. And these two guys at the forefront in that headlining spot, Alex Pereira in literally 5 years has become, actually, what am I saying 5 years? In less than three total years, has become one of the most recognizable names, not only in the UFC, but in the entire sport of mixed martial arts. This guy is at every single event, taking pictures with all the fans. He's put on every broadcast sitting front row. And Jamal Hill may not be as fan-loved. He's a little bit more hate. He goes at people on Twitter, but he's at every single event. He's getting shown on every broadcast. He has an MMA podcast that is very highly regarded and is great in terms of the production level of that show. These guys deserve this opportunity. Yeah, they may not be Conor McGregor. They may not be John Jones, George St. Pierre, but they are the two best light heavyweights in the world. It is a division that has the longest amount of history and fandom behind it, in my opinion, in UFC's history, the 205-pound division. And it feels right that that division gets the headlining spot of the biggest card in the company's history. So that's it for the main event. But now we go to the co-main event. The strawweight championship of the world gets defended. Zhang Weili looks to continue her reign of terror, and Yan Xiaonan looks to make history and become UFC champion. This co-main event between Zhang Weili, the champion, and Yan Xiaonan, the number one contender in the strawweight division, is a first of its kind in UFC history. It is the first time that we see two Chinese fighters, two Chinese women competing for a UFC championship. It's only fitting that so many things are similar with these two ladies. Both are 8-2 in the UFC. Both are 34 years old. Both have a 63-inch reach. Both have beaten former UFC champions en route to becoming the highest level, the highest tier of the strawweight division. Now, some may say Zhang Weili is many, many tiers above the rest of the division, but I guess that's what we're here to find out on Saturday. Zhang Weili is one of my favorite fighters in the UFC. Have a poster of her and Joanna Jędrzejczyk on my wall. She may just be the most entertaining women's fighter in the UFC. And if you don't put her at number one, you gotta have her in the top three at minimum. And I'm loving this narrative here for UFC 300. We talked about the main event and how it didn't take long for both guys to get a championship opportunity. Even other people mentioned in the main event discussion, like Jiří Procházka, you know, that light heavyweight picture, it didn't take a lot for those fighters to reach the top and to become a champion or get a shot to become champion. Well, let us not forget that it didn't take long for Zhang Weili to become the women's strawweight champion for the first time, that is. She debuted in August of 2018, and just 1 year later, three fights later, she was fighting Jessica Andrade for the strawweight championship of the world in China, headlining a card to become the first Chinese champion in UFC history in her home country. And what does Zhang Weili do? She demolishes Jessica Andrade. She runs through Jessica Andrade in 42 seconds. From there, she goes on to defend her belt against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, one of the longest reigning women's champions in UFC history, one of the greatest fighters in UFC history. And what do those two women do? They put on the best women's fight in UFC history and one of the greatest fights in all of UFC history, regardless of male or female. But in April of 2021, it seemed that maybe Zhang Weili had met her match when she went up against Rose Namajunas, former champion, and gets knocked out in the very first round in less than a minute and a half, and then loses the rematch later on that year in November. And what was a very, very closely contested split decision that went all 25 minutes. But since then, Zhang Weili has been on her revenge tour and made it look easy. In her rematch with Joanna Jędrzejczyk, not only does she beat her again, but she knocks her out in the second round with a spinning back fist. She then takes the title from Carla Esparza with ease, submitting her 1 minute and 5 seconds into the second round, and then defends her second reign title for the first time against Amanda Lemos, who to me was probably the second most dangerous woman in this division outside of Zhang Weili. And Zhang Weili put on a historic, quite literally, title defense. It was one of the most one-sided fights you will ever witness. It shattered records for strike differential in a title fight, and she demolished Amanda Lemos for 25 straight minutes. How a finish didn't happen is beyond me. But here we are now, April 13th, 2024, and Yan Xiaonan is looking to become the second Chinese champion ever. And to do so, she has to take out her fellow countrywoman. Wins over Angela Hill, Karolina Kowalkiewicz, and Claudia Gadella got Yan Xiaonan to the highest point in her career. But that is when she faltered at the biggest level, because Carla Esparza in May of 2021 had the best performance of her entire life and defeated Yan Xiaonan. Not only defeated her, but knocked her out in the second round, ran through her, controlled her on the ground, and got a nasty ground and pound finish. And from there, it set up a second straight loss for Yan Xiaonan, this time against Marina Rodriguez in March of 2022, a fight that was closely contested that went 15 minutes. But we saw Rodriguez get the split decision victory. Yan Xiaonan has corrected her path, is back in the win column with two straight victories, a decision over Mackenzie Dern, and a knockout in just 2 minutes and 20 seconds over Jessica Andrade last May. So this will be the first fight for Yan Xiaonan in over 11 months, whereas we did see Zhang Weili fight in August. So still a relatively long layoff for the champion, but a longer layoff for the challenger. And I like this fight because Zhang Weili is great on the feet and can knock out anyone, can outpoint you on the feet for 25 minutes if need be. But she's added so many wrinkles to her game and gotten better fight by fight, to the point that she can now grapple with the best in the world and not only do it and compete, but beat them there in that aspect of the game. Yan Xiaonan hasn't yet gotten to prove that second wave that Zhang Weili has. She hasn't gotten to prove as much, I should say, on the ground as Zhang Weili. But on the feet, she is dangerous. She is a technical sniper and a very methodical point fighter. When fights go the distance, Yan Xiaonan is nearly unbeatable with a 9-1 record when they go the full amount of time, but she has not had to do it for 25 minutes. Zhang Weili has multiple times and came out on the winning side more than the losing side. I really hope that this fight gets the respect it deserves for the monumental status that it truly holds, something we've never seen in the UFC before. Two Chinese fighters, specifically two Chinese women, not only fighting, but fighting for UFC gold. History is on the line. And last but not least, the third title fight of the evening, and it's only fitting because UFC 300, Justin Gaethje, the number two ranked lightweight in the world and the BMF champion, welcomes Max Holloway back to lightweight, the current number two featherweight in the world, the former featherweight champion of the world. It's gonna be violent. Has there ever been a fight on paper that has screamed fight of the night more than Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway? Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje combine for 23 post-fight bonuses. Now, I know that question I posed is a little bit more difficult than what it just is off the top of my head here. Yeah, I mean, especially if you just want to look at the guys Justin Gaethje has fought. Charles Oliveira, who has the most bonuses of anyone in UFC history. Dustin Poirier, Eddie Alvarez, just to name a few. But come on, this has got to be near the top of the list. This is violence guaranteed. This is a banger if I have ever seen one. And it's for the BMF title. Now, I know a lot of people don't like this belt. It's just a made-up belt. But my goodness, it's fun, right? Justin Gaethje started his UFC career 1-2. He beat Michael Johnson in an incredible fight that nearly went to the third round, just 12 seconds shy before getting the knockout. But then he would lose to Eddie Alvarez. He would lose to Dustin Poirier. Both of those by knockout. It looked like, okay, maybe, you know, we bring this guy over from the World Series of Fighting, now known as the PFL. He'll be here for some fun fights, but never quite make it to the top of the division. He proved those doubters and that narrative wrong by rallying off four straight victories, four straight knockouts after that April 2018 loss to Poirier, and earned a shot at the undisputed title by demolishing Tony Ferguson to become the interim champion and face Khabib Nurmagomedov. Now, in hindsight, that was Khabib Nurmagomedov's last fight of his career. He was never going out with a loss, but Gaethje did win the first round on the judges' scorecards before being submitted in round two. It would only take one victory after that loss over Michael Chandler that went the full 15 minutes to earn a second shot at undisputed gold, this time against Charles DuBronx Oliveira, also on UFC 300. But again, Justin Gaethje would lose his second chance at the undisputed title by getting submitted to Charles Oliveira. So did it take one win to get back in the title picture this time around for Justin? No. Did it take two? Well, kinda, but no. It will take at least three victories to get a crack at the undisputed lightweight title this time for Justin Gaethje. He beat Rafael Fiziev over the course of three rounds. He knocked out Dustin Poirier with one of the best knockouts of 2023 in the second round of their fight for the BMF title last July. It was a nasty head kick that got the silver belt wrapped around Gaethje's waist. He didn't get the undisputed crack at Islam Makhachev. We have since seen Islam defend a second time against Alexander Volkanovski and knock out Alexander Volkanovski. It looks like he's aiming to fight in June or July of this year. potentially against Dustin Poirier. I think a lot needs to play out here this weekend before we commit fully to Poirier getting that shot. First and foremost here, if Justin Gaethje wins, and honestly, even if Max Holloway wins. This will be Max Holloway's second attempt at 155 pounds in the UFC. The first came back in 2019 in a five-round, one of the best fights of the year with Dustin Poirier for the interim lightweight title, but Poirier will get the better of Holloway on that night and become the interim champ and go on to have two undisputed title shots of his own, much like Justin Gaethje. But that wasn't a career-defining moment for Max because he would just go back down to 145 and defend his belt again, this time against Frankie Edgar in July of that very same year. That would become Max's third successful title defense at 145 pounds, but would set up an inevitable trilogy with Volkanovski, but first a pairing of title fights in which Max would not only lose the title, but then lose the rematch, both via decision. Since the second fight with Volk, he's won four of his last five fights, and you guessed it, the only loss in that stretch was in the trilogy fight to Alexander Volkanovski. It also came by way of decision, but the wins have been against Calvin Kattar, Yair Rodriguez, Arnold Allen, and the Korean Zombie most recently in August of last year with a brutal 23-second knockout into the third round. So it seems as though Max has all but earned his crack at the featherweight title, which is now held by Ilya Topuria, who dethroned Volkanovski after his historic title reign at 145 pounds. But instead of going directly for the title, Max Holloway accepted a fight for the BMF belt up 10 pounds at 155, and he's looking to make it 1-1 in the lightweight division. And if he wins here, in my opinion, Max Holloway's a number one contender in two different weight classes. Now, it may not be as easy to just give him the 155-pound title shot if he beats Gaethje because we do have Oliveira versus Saryukian on this card as well that we will be breaking down and discussing later. However, he's definitely on the short list, right? It would be the winner of Oliveira Saryukian, Dustin Poirier, and Max Holloway if he wins, and then just interchange that with Gaethje if he wins here. But if you look at what Max has done at 145, been a champion, multiple title defenses, fought at 155 before for the interim belt, tried to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov, I think people tend to forget, for the title on like 3 days' notice. The commission wouldn't allow him to cut the weight in that short amount of time, but he's always been about that life. That is why he's getting this chance to fight for this belt, which in my opinion just screams the most entertaining fighter in the organization. So here we're going to get two guys that like to stand and bang for 25 minutes or less. Max Holloway, Justin Gaethje, the BMF title on the line, a potential title shot against Islam Makhachev at 155 on the line. And for Max here, if he wins and doesn't get the 155-pound title, well, he is absolutely front and center for the 145-pound title should he decide to move back down. But I want to get your guys' thoughts that on this, I should say. If he beats Gaethje here, should Max make a permanent move to 155? In the videos and pictures that I've seen leading up to this event, he looks jacked. He looks noticeably bigger and more filled out this time around than he was back in 2019. This looks like a potential career pivot to 155, a permanent change, if you will, to the lightweight division. Now, if he loses, maybe he does go back down. But if he wins, I think the question has to be asked, will he just stay at lightweight? And Gaethje, on the other hand, has more than earned the shot at the lightweight title. He beat an up-and-comer in Fazeev, and he knocked out a veteran in Dustin Poirier. So if he just beats Holloway here, that's icing on top of the cake. And I believe is the 100% number one contender next, over Dustin Poirier, and in my opinion, over the winner of Saryukian and Oliveira. But time will tell. That is what Saturday night is for. This fight has a lot on the line. Maybe if you look at everything in the picture, or the grand scheme of this fight, may just be the most on the line of all of the fights outside of the two actual championship fights in the main and co-main event, of course. But this fight and the other 10 on the card, this has the most at stake because you can be the BMF champion. You can earn a shot at the 155-pound title. You can earn a shot at the 145-pound title if you're Max Holloway. But if you lose, I think if you're either guy here, there's a lot of questions to be had on the future of their career. And now that the UFC 300 title fight discussions are over, we move on to the rest of the main card featuring Charles Oliveira versus Armand Saryukian and Cody Brundage versus Bo Nickel. And we will touch on the four regular prelims. We start at 155 pounds, a number one contender spot, potentially anyway. It seems like there's a lot of number one contender spots lately in the lightweight division. Number one, Charles Oliveira. Number four, Armand Saryukian. 34-year-old Charles Oliveira has lost one fight in the last 6 years. And that one fight is Islam Makhachev in their title bout in October of 2022. Besides that, Charles Oliveira has been quite literally perfection. I think it's fair to say that the title run that Charles Oliveira had from May 2021 until that loss to Islam in October of 2022 is one of the most electrifying, fun title runs that we've ever seen in UFC history, especially lightweight history, which has a very long lineage. He comes back after a 10-8 round to Michael Chandler and knocks him out in the second round. He comes back after being knocked down against Dustin Poirier and submits him in the third round. He comes back after almost being knocked out by Justin Gaethje and finishes him in the very same round, round number one. And then he goes on to face Islam Makhachev. And what we just saw, Islam have a star making performance. Islam pitched a shutout up until the finish, 3 minutes and 16 seconds into round two. But Oliveira hasn't wasted time. He got right back on the horse in June of last year. He knocked out Beneil Dariush, didn't even need one full round to do so. After that victory against Beneil, it seemed as though Charles would get his shot right back into the title picture with Islam. Charles, I believe, had to pull out of a scheduled bout with him due to a laceration that he suffered on his eyebrow in training for their fight. In stepped Alexander Volkanovski. And we saw what Islam Makhachev would do. Not only did he beat Volkanovski at the beginning of 2023, he finished him and knocked him out with a head kick toward the end of 2023. And now Makhachev awaits whomever may be the number one contender. The first option, Dustin Poirier, who got a big win against Benoit St. Denis at UFC 299. And now on this very card, we have two potential number one contender spots for the same exact title. I already talked about Gaethje versus Holloway. If you haven't seen that, if you're watching on YouTube, go check out that because I talk about the title picture there. And then we have this fight, Oliveira versus Saryukian. And let us not forget that when Dana White initially announced this fight, he said this.
Number one ranked lightweight Charles Oliveira is taking on number four ranked Armand Saryukian in a number one contender fight.
A few moments later,
the winner will face Islam when he returns this summer.
This fight is going to be nothing short of spectacular, and the stakes are at an all-time high, not only for Oliveira, but for Armand Saryukian, the young rising 27-year-old prospect looking to get his first crack at UFC gold. Oliveira and Saryukian share similar losses, and that of which Islam Makhachev. Armand Saryukian debuted in the UFC in April of 2019. If I can recall correctly, it was relatively on short notice, and he took Islam Makhachev the distance. It went all 15 minutes en route to a decision loss. The only other blemish on his UFC record, which is 8-2, was a razor thin fight with Matosh Gamrot, and one in which I thought he won, and a lot of people in the community felt that Armand won one of the most high level MMA bouts of 2022. But outside of that, he's beaten Olivier Aubin-Mercier, a two-time PFL champion. He's beaten Joel Alvarez, Demiryius Magulov, Beneil Dariush last December, the biggest win of Armand's career. He knocked out Beneil 1 minute and 4 seconds into their main event bout in Austin, Texas. And that's what I think is so cool about this fight here with Charles versus Armand is that regardless of the winner, it sets up a story and a rematch with Islam Makhachev. On the side of Charles, it is a rematch that happened already for the title, a long history between those two. Charles never got to face Habib, Nurmagomedov, and now he has built a bit of a rivalry, if you will, with Habib's protege. And for Arman, him and Islam go back 5 years. Two guys that were on the come up together, fought each other when they were both so green. Coming into this fight, Arman Tsarukyan is a more than 2-1 favorite with Charles Oliveira at plus 180 on the comeback. And that's been the story of the past few years for Charles Oliveira. He has been the underdog in all four of those title fights that I discussed. He got victories in three of them. He's built the biggest stardom point of his career based off of being an underdog. Can he pull it off one more time, beat Arman Tsarukyan, and get the rightful claim to face Islam Makhachev a second time for the lightweight championship? And now we get into the bout that is opening the UFC 300 pay-per-view card, Bo Nickel, Cody Brundage, 185 pounds. Collegiate wrestling phenom and national champion Bo Nickel has transitioned, some would say perfectly, and his record makes good on that perfect claim, 5-0 in mixed martial arts at just 28 years old. He is getting ready to enter the prime years as a mixed martial artist, and he's getting another big spot on a UFC pay-per-view card. He had his first Dana White Contender Series spot in August of 2022, disposed of his opponent in 1 minute and 2 seconds via submission. Dana White said, "Hey, that's just your second pro fight. Let's get you back for a second Dana White Contender Series fight because that'll really show me that you belong." What does Bo do? He makes good on his second Dana White Contender Series fight, gets another first round submission, this time in just 52 seconds. That was enough for Dana to say, "All right, you know what? It's pointless to keep you coming back for this show. Let's bring you to the big leagues." And since being called up, Bo Nickel has still remained perfect. 2-0 thus far in the UFC. He debuts on a monumental card, UFC 285, in March of 2023, when John Jones made his illustrious return after many years off in his debut at heavyweight. And then he got featured on International Fight Week, UFC 290, last July, and now his third spot in the UFC is on the biggest card of all time, UFC 300. Oh, and by the way, as I mentioned, he's on the pay-per-view main card. It's pretty clear that we're on to something here with Bo Nickel, and the UFC realizes that. That is why they have placed him on this main card. That is why they have put him on this card at all compared to all of these other insane names. 12 champions, 18 ranked fighters, yada, yada, yada. The list goes on for how crazy this card is. And yet Bo Nickel is the outlier, if you will. The young guy, the non-ranked guy, only 5 professional fights. But he's getting this opportunity to catapult himself and his stardom even further. And on the other side of the cage is 29-year-old Cody Brundage with an opportunity to play big time spoiler. He started his UFC run back in September of 2021, and it went 2-4 to start out. Now, he has won 2 straight fights. One of them was because of a disqualification due to his opponent, which was Jacob Malkoon, but he did get a big knockout with a slam back in December against Zachary Reese, for what it's worth. So he's coming in here with a 10-5 record, and the odds are absolutely astonishing. Bo Nickel is a minus 2100 favorite, Cody Brundage as an underdog plus 1100. Now, I've seen a lot of people just doing small sprinkles on Cody, and I can't blame them with those types of odds. Being that Bo Nickel is still relatively unproven, he is getting a guy here in Brundage who has a plethora of UFC experience, regardless of how it has fared for him. It's UFC experience nonetheless. But I do look for Bo Nickel to roll here and continue on this, you know, name that he is building for himself. This would be his third UFC victory if he gets that win on Saturday night. And it inches himself one step closer to the middleweight rankings, which isn't the most stacked or deep division in the UFC. There's only so many more names the UFC can feed to Bo Nickel before he's forced himself into the top 15 at 185 pounds. Now we transition from the main card to the regular prelim spot. We've got four fights here to discuss. The prelim headliner before we get into the pay-per-view card Saturday night is a top five battle at light heavyweight, which may just determine the number one contender for the guys headlining UFC 300. We have Jiří Procházka welcoming back Alexander Rakic. The winner may just be next for the winner of the main event, Pereira versus Hill. Jiří Procházka has had four UFC fights, yet to me, it feels like he's a 20-fight, 10-year UFC veteran. In those four fights, he's faced nothing but top-ranked opponents. He's become a UFC light heavyweight champion, and then he has lost to the current light heavyweight champion, Alex Pereira. We all know that he came over to the UFC in the summer of 2020 with a ton of hype and potential. He had an insanely successful career in other promotions, including Ryzen. And now here in the UFC, he's not been in anything shy of an exciting fight. He lost in a championship fight to Alex Pereira in November of 2023. That is why Poatan sits atop the 205-pound throne entering UFC 300. But let us not forget that Jiří earned his title shot after two victories in the UFC. He won the title after beating Glover Teixeira with seconds remaining in their fight, one of the best fights of all time. But he had to vacate the light heavyweight strap when he suffered a very dangerous and severe shoulder injury. So we've only seen him fight one time since then. It was in a losing effort, albeit a relatively competitive fight up until the finishing sequence in the late second round. But he's back here, a quick turnaround, looking to make good on lost time because of his injury. But he's welcoming back someone who's, in my opinion, one of the most underrated fighters in the entire UFC. Alexander Rakic, the 32-year-old, is returning to fight for the first time in just under 2 years. He last fought May 14th, 2022 against Jan Blachowicz. It was a main event affair. That was a number one contender fight. It started out very competitive, back and forth, but 1 minute into the third round, Rakic blew out his knee, tore his ACL, and was put on the sidelines. Before that fight, he had recorded a 6-1 record in the UFC light heavyweight division with the only loss to former title challenger Volkan Ozdemir, and that was a close split decision. But he had beaten Devin Clark, Jimmy Manoa, Anthony Smith, Thiago Santos. He is an extremely precise, technical, and powerful kickboxer that minimizes risk and takes advantage of his opponents on the feet. So to me, this fight is super intriguing because Jiří is a wild man. He is just a samurai warrior. When they say fight style, it should just say samurai warrior for Jiří Procházka. But for Alexander Rakic, he's so methodical, slow plotting, and can find spots when they matter the most. 15 minutes is all these guys have here, and those 15 minutes will determine the next number one contender in the light heavyweight division. Jiří is going to look to absolutely just overwhelm Rakic. We haven't seen him, and I'm saying him as in Rakic, face anyone quite like Jiří. And you can honestly say that for anyone that matches up against Jiří, because he is that type of just rare commodity in this fight game. If Rakic can respond well with his counter striking, get a win, and maybe even get a finish victory by capitalizing on the fight style of Jiří, he's right there in the mix and should be next for the winner of the 300 main event. Next, we move to the featherweight division, where the number 8-ranked Calvin Kattar is welcoming the number 2-ranked bantamweight and former bantamweight champion of the world, Aljamain Sterling, up to featherweight. We knew that this move was inevitably going to happen for Aljo after he has mentioned it for the first time a few years back. He's now 34 years old. He became the champion. He defended his title, and then he lost his title at UFC 292 in Boston last August to Sean O'Malley. We've seen Sean O'Malley turn into the biggest active star in the UFC right now, and he has even defended the belt one time since against Marlon Chito Vera. Aljo bounces up to 145, and I think it's a division where he could have some very fun matchups, but this right here against Calvin Kattar by far isn't an easy matchup. Calvin Kattar is one of the best boxers in all of the UFC, and specifically in the 145-pound division. He is very strong, long, and rangy, and I look to see how Aljo will respond to that. Not only is Aljo coming up in weight, but he's going up against someone that is a complete opposite style of himself. Sterling is a grappler. He's known for his wrestling, his jiu-jitsu down on the mat, how strong he is on the mat when he gets his opponents down there. Calvin Kattar, though, to his credit, we have not really seen him have to go through that style of fighter, especially over the last couple of years. Yes, Calvin's lost three of his last four fights, but it is against the best featherweights in the world, all top 10 opponents: Max Holloway, Giga Chikadze, Josh Emmett, Arnold Allen. You know, two of those guys have either been a champion or challenged for a title. Giga is on the come up, and Arnold Allen is still very much right there to get a title in the future. He's fended off guys like Jeremy Stephens, Dan Ige, Ricardo Lamas back in 2019. He is a very smart, intelligent fighter, 36 years old. Yes, he's taken damage, but really a lot of that damage came in that Max Holloway fight. That really bumps up the stats on the side of Kattar negatively anyways. Again, we haven't seen Kattar tested much in the grappling, as I just said, but when he has been tested there, he has a 91% takedown defense. Now, Aljo proved, especially in that Petr Yan fight, that it isn't about how many times he gets his opponent there. It's that once he does get them there, they will not get back up. Aljo isn't going to be that outsized. Yes, he's going to lose some advantage in the height department by 4 inches, but the reach is only a 1-inch difference on the side of Calvin Kattar. Aljo is a very muscular, strong bantamweight. I think he will fill out relatively well here at 145. Will his strength carry over well from 145 and allow him to get his opponents down to the ground? And it starts with Calvin Kattar. And this is definitely more of a Monday conversation due to what happens in the Max and Justin fight and what happens here between Kattar and Sterling. But if Aljo wins, he's immediately in the top 10 of featherweight and honestly would probably only need one more high-profile win before he's in the title mix in this new weight class. We now move to the women's bantamweight division, where the 42-year-old former champion Holly Holm welcomes Kayla Harrison to 135 pounds. And more importantly, welcomes her to the UFC. Holly Holm is one of the most credentialed women's fighters in the UFC, in mixed martial arts, in combat sports, a former boxing world champion, a former UFC world champion. At 42 years old, still getting victories and still adding wrinkles to her game. That is why she has been able to sustain a ranking for so long. At one point in two different weight classes, even when women's featherweight was a thing in the UFC. That is why she has been able to get wins when it seemed like she was on her way out, to prove people wrong. She's won technically three of her last four fights. Now, I know she is coming off of a loss last July to Myra Bueno Silva, but it did get overturned to a no contest after Myra tested positive for banned substances due to her ADHD. So the last win for Holly Holm, though, was still in 2023 against Yana Santos, where she looked great. And she's really only lost to the best women in the world. Miesha Tate in 2016, Valentina Shevchenko, Jermaine Durandamy, which was a featherweight title fight, Chris Cyborg, Amanda Nunes, and then Ketlin Vieira, maybe the only outlier, if you will, in that losses kind of resume. But Ketlin Vieira is still very much so a talented fighter and a top-ranked opponent in this 135-pound division. And enter the 33-year-old, two-time Olympic gold medalist in judo, two-time PFL champion, and 16-1 MMA record holder, Kayla Harrison. Kayla Harrison won gold in the 2012 and 2016 Olympic Games, then moved over to mixed martial arts and debuted in June of 2018 and ran through the PFL lightweight division. She was a two-time PFL champion. She's coming off of a victory last November against former UFC veteran Aspen Ladd, and the only loss on her resume is to Larissa Pacheco, the most dangerous woman in the PFL, someone who, prior to that, Kayla had beaten two times. Kayla is in her prime, is a very, very good talent that trains with the best team in the world down in American Top Team in Florida, but there are still so many questions that the community has about her. Now, originally, I would say that her strength of schedule would be number one, but being that this is at bantamweight, I think the number one question coming into UFC 300 is the battle on the scale Friday morning. I am recording this Thursday morning, so this will be out before the weigh-ins for her. If you're watching this on YouTube and if you're listening on audio, this has been released and they're weighing in shortly thereafter. But Kayla has never competed professionally in mixed martial arts at 135 pounds. She competed in the lightweight division, 155 pounds for women in the PFL for three separate seasons. And she has only had one fight, to my knowledge, that was at, it was either a 150 catchweight or 145 featherweight bout. And that was a quick stint down in Invicta during the pandemic where she defeated Courtney King via TKO. And a lot of people are throwing around shade and saying she won't make the weight. And I'm just here to say, and again, recording this beforehand, so I can't be held too much responsible here if this is, ends up being a bad take. But she's had a lot of time to properly cut this weight. It's not like she came into fight week weighing 165 pounds and has to cut 30 pounds in 5 days. She just had an interview on the MMA Hour two-ish weeks ago, and she said she was already around 150 pounds. So that's only 14 pounds really is what she needs to cut to make 136, as they're allowed the 1 pound allowance. So 14 pounds over the course of the final 2 weeks of training camp. I think Kayla's a professional. She's been cutting weight as a job for years and years and years, competing at the highest level. I think she has leaned down. If you've seen her on Instagram, she looks noticeably leaner while still being able to carry a lot of muscle mass, which is a very interesting thing to just wrap around your brain, how she still looks so strong physically. And we'll see what she looks like on the scale and entering the cage Saturday night. But if she gets past that first question of making the weight, people will then begin to discuss her strength of schedule. And look, my viewpoint on it is she was in the PFL. She took the fights that were offered to her. But regardless, this is a massive step up. But the UFC knows exactly what they are doing, because if they launch her in with Holly Holm and she beats Holly Holm, that is your next women's bantamweight title challenger. Kayla, known for her judo and her wrestling. Holly, known for being an amazing boxer and kickboxer. It's a clash of styles here. Can Kayla get Holly Holm to the ground? We've not seen many people have to try and do that to get victories over Holly. And Holly, for what it's worth, has upped her wrestling throughout her career. Yes, we don't get to see her use that takedown defense as often. It's sitting at 78%. But she's utilized a lot of clinch work later on in her career and being stronger than her opponents. Will she be stronger physically than Kayla Harrison to hold her against the cage, to keep herself off of the cage and away from takedowns? Because if she keeps this fight standing, this is going to be a very uphill battle for Kayla Harrison. Yes, Kayla's getting better. She's growing more comfortable in the striking, but this is a whole new ball game going up against a boxing world champion and someone with as high a pedigree in striking as Holly Holm. I very much look forward to this fight because this is a big addition to the women's bantamweight division that desperately needs new life. If Holly Holm gets the victory, the old guard reigns supreme and holds their spot. If Kayla Harrison gets the victory, the new wave comes in and earns a right to fight for the title. And last but not least, closing out the regular prelims, Sadiq Youssef, the 13th ranked featherweight in the world, welcoming Diego Lopez to the rankings. Sadiq fought on the Contender Series in July of 2018, entered the UFC in December of 2018, and has amassed a record of 6-2 thus far in his UFC career, the losses to Arnold Allen and most recently Edson Barboza last October. When him and Arnold fought, they were still two guys kind of rising up the ranks in the back half of the division. It doesn't ring as true as a fight with them two would be today in terms of the high profileness of the fight. But his fight last October against Edson was that big moment, that big jump for Sadiq Youssef to really make a name for himself in this division, and it looked like it was going to be successful. He starched Edson Barboza in the first round of their main event slot, got a 10-8, nearly finished Barboza, but round by round, Barboza, the seasoned veteran, clawed his way back and won the decision over the course of 25 minutes. If you're a longtime listener or viewer of this show, you know I'm a big fan of Super Sadiq Youssef. I think he's an amazing personality, a very positive, like-minded person that just likes to spread positivity. But when he gets in the cage, he's a savage. He's a very methodical, fun fighter to watch go to work in that octagon. And Diego Lopez, he might be the UFC 2023 Rookie of the Year. He debuted on short notice last May and took the undefeated Movzorov Loyev the full 15 minutes in a very close fight, then bounced back in August and defeated Gavin Ducker, and then in November and knocked out Pat Sabatini. Both of those fights combine for less than 3 total minutes of fight time. Not only is Diego Lopez an electric fighter to watch when he steps in the cage, but he's an amazing coach in the corners of fighters such as UFC Women's Flyweight Champion Alexa Grasso. He's with that amazing camp down in Mexico. Everyone wants to see Diego Lopez fight. This is the people's main event, it feels like, at least for the prelims. You could have at least 7 different people's main events on this 300 card if you wanted to. He's only went the distance 6 times in 29, what will now be his 30th professional fight. Sadiq, high level, methodical. Diego Lopez, high level, but a little bit more chaotic. Something's got to give. Sadiq wants to hold his spot in the rankings. Diego Lopez wants to snatch that spot in the rankings. And from the prelims, we go to the early prelims. 4 fights remain for the UFC 300 breakdown. It starts in the lightweight division. Top 15 ranked opponents, Jalen Turner and Renato Moicano. Let's get into it. The 6'3" tarantula, Jalen Turner, is coming into UFC 300 off of a victory over Bobby Green in December of last year. But before that, had lost 2 fights in a row. But both of those were razor close split decisions against Matosh Gamrot and Dan Hooker, both of which you could argue Turner won. And before that 2-loss streak, he had tallied off 5 straight victories with 5 straight finishes. Jalen Turner is one of the most exciting fighters in the lightweight division, which says a lot because this has been the most exciting division in the UFC for a very long time. He has a 100% finish rate, 14 wins, 14 finishes, and he will look to make it a perfect 15 out of 15, but it may not come very easy against Renato Moicano, a gamer who's been around for a long time. Renato Moicano has been around in the UFC for nearly 10 years, dating back to December of 2014, yet he is only 34 years old and looks to be in the best shape of his career. He's won 4 of his last 5 fights, with the only loss coming to Rafael Dos Anjos, and that was on super short notice, flying across the world, going 25 minutes with the former champion. But outside of that, he's beaten Drew Dober, he's beaten Brad Riddell, Alexander Hernandez, and Jai Herbert during this stretch of success. And if you want to go down the list here of the career for Moicano, which has spanned across 2 divisions, look at the other guys he's losing to. Rafael Fiziev, Korean Zombie, Jose Aldo, Brian Ortega. I mean, he's losing to nothing but the best of the best in their respective divisions. Now Money Moicano is looking to make it 3 straight victories, none of which would be bigger than the number 10 ranked Jalen Turner. Next is the fight that, in my opinion, is the one that is getting slept on the most on this entire UFC 300 card. We have the number 4 ranked strawweight in the world and former champion Jessica Andrade going up against the number 6 ranked strawweight Marina Rodriguez. Jessica Andrade started 2023 with a victory over Lauren Murphy. She ended 2023 with a finish victory over Mackenzie Dern, but sandwiched in between were 3 losses, all via stoppage. 5 fights in 2023 for Jessica Andrade, and now she gets her spot on the UFC 300 card. And let's be honest here, she's literally fought nothing but the best in the world for years and years and years at this point, dating back to her becoming a champion. And those losses last year were to Erin Blanchfield, who just lost a number 1 contender fight at flyweight. She took that on short notice, by the way, Jessica Andrade. She then lost to Yan Xiaonan by finish. Oh, and by the way, That victory earned Yan Xiaonan the title fight shot on this very card this weekend. And the other loss was in August to Tatiana Suarez, someone who, if it wasn't for injuries, would already be a champion in the UFC, if you ask me. And on the other side, Marina Rodriguez, throughout 2021 and 2022, rallied off four straight victories against Amanda Ribas, Michelle Waterson Gomez, Mackenzie Dern, and Yan Xiaonan. Those four wins got her to a title shot opportunity, in my opinion. And rather than waiting, she chose to take a fight with Amanda Lemos, and she came out on the losing side of that and then lost again to Virna Jandiroba last May. But she didn't end 2023 on a negative note. She did beat Michelle Waterson Gomez for a second time, this time with a strong TKO finish in the second round. Marina looks to get back into title contention, but to do so, she'll have to take out the former champion, Jessica Andrade. Andrade is one of the most exciting women's fighters on the roster. I said Zhang Weili is the most exciting. At the close number two spot is probably Jessica Andrade. She comes out ready to stand and bang no matter what. And Marina Rodriguez is a very technical, sharp Muay Thai practitioner. She's very dangerous on the feet. We've seen her knock out Michelle Waterson Gomez. We've seen her knock out Amanda Ribas. She has the technique and skill set to finish Jessica Andrade. And we know that Andrade has the ability to finish her opponents here. I look for this to actually be one of the best fights on the prelims. People stop sleeping on it. This is high stakes and high octane action. Next up, this one is for the OGs, baby, in the lightweight division. Bobby King Green, currently a top 15 ranked fighter at 155 pounds, is taking on Jim Miller. Somehow, some way, these two paths have never crossed until now at UFC 300. These two fighters combine for 27 years worth of experience in just the UFC alone. Bobby Green debuted in 2013. Jim Miller debuted way back in October of 2008. Not only do these two combine for 27 years of experience in the UFC, but they combine for 68 UFC fights. Come on, man. You can't write this one up better. Bobby Green, throughout these past 3 or 4 years, has been on a pretty strong stretch. He's even won two of his last three fights, Tony Ferguson and Grant Dawson, both by finish. But he is coming off of that brutal knockout last December that I had previously mentioned against Jalen Turner. Meanwhile, the 40-year-old Jim Miller has won five of his last six fights, all by finish. What is going on here? This is unbelievable. Jim Miller is looking to extend his UFC record for most fights, most victories, and he's looking to crack into the top 15 at 40 years old and become the only fighter to ever get victories on UFC 100, UFC 200, and UFC 300. People that say this man isn't a Hall of Famer, get out of here, man. Jim Miller, Hall of Fame bound. This fight right here, banger guaranteed. And last but not least, the first fight of the night for UFC 300, the curtain jerker, is between two former champions. The former flyweight champion of the world and current number 8 ranked bantamweight, Davison Figueiredo, will take on the former bantamweight champion of the world, Cody Garbrandt. Davison Figueiredo's insane run from 2019 to 2020 earned him the right to become the flyweight champion of the world and set up a quadrilogy rivalry with Brandon Moreno, one that he did end up coming out on the losing side of, one win, two losses, and one draw. But it was a rivalry that, in a large part, saved the UFC flyweight division. And since that rivalry came to a conclusion, he has moved up to 135 pounds, and he got his debut victory in the weight class in December against top 10 Rob Font. And Cody No Love Garbrandt, we all know the story. He was undefeated. He dethroned Dominick Cruz in one of the best title-winning performances in UFC history. But ever since that night in December of 2016, it hasn't been all sunshine and rainbows for the former champ. He went on a stretch where he lost 5 out of 6 fights, 4 of those 5 via knockout loss, but he has righted the wrongs. He's won 2 straight fights. He had a 2-0 year in 2023 after a near year and a half long layoff between December of 2021 and March of 2023. That first victory of last year was against Trevin Jones, and then he knocked out Brian Kelleher in December. Now the 32-year-old Garbrandt will look to make one final run at that title, and it starts with the number 8-ranked bantamweight, Davison Figueiredo. Don't blink during this fight. We know that these both have fight-ending power at any moment. 11 out of the 14 wins for Cody Garbrandt have come by way of knockout, and 4 of his 5 losses have come by way of knockout. And Figueiredo has finished 17 of his 22 victories and been finished 2 of his 3 losses. There's no better way to open up a fight card than by this right here. Is it safe to say Davison Figueiredo versus Cody Garbrandt is the best opening fight of any card in UFC history? If your answer is no, you're lying. So that is it for UFC 300. That is a wrap. 13 fights. Is that the most fights we've ever broken down on one single podcast episode? Noah and I started off by really hitting deep on a lot of cards. So maybe this is up there for one of the most, if not the most, but I had a blast every single second. And I do just want to quickly give the PFL some flowers. I know they're going to get overshadowed this week by UFC 300. Some people may not even know that the PFL is having a card, but it is week 2 of the regular season for the Professional Fighters League. This week is light heavyweights and lightweights. The headlining bout is Impa Kasanganai versus Alex Pelosi, a little PFL versus Bellator action. The main spot of the lightweight tournament will be Clay Collard versus Patricky Pitbull, which is an insanely good fight on paper, one that is obviously going to get lost in the hectic week that is UFC 300 fight week. But please be sure to tune in. I know I will do my best to tune in Friday night. If I can't Friday night, I'm going to try to squeeze it in before UFC 300 starts on Saturday. No in-depth breakdown here. I'm trying to get out my predictions for all 6 of the divisions for the PFL for what it's worth, so you can catch those on social media. I hope to get out 2 for these weight classes this week, if the UFC 300 craziness will allow me to do so. So UFC 300, PFL week 2, what a crazy, crazy week it is in the mixed martial arts space, and that is why it is the best space in all of sports. I hope you all enjoyed this episode. If you did, please be sure to follow along on your favorite audio platform. Leave a rating as it helps the show grow. Follow the show on social media. Subscribe to the channel on YouTube. There's positives to following along on every single platform that you are able, and any and all support is greatly appreciated. It is a massive week, as we all know. It's going to be a crazy weekend, and boy, oh boy, the recap that we have coming up is going to be bonkers. Enjoy the fights this weekend, and I will catch you in the next episode.